All things indicate that we are working to solve a possible communications challenge in this.
Intuitive Machines is still trying to figure out if its lunar lander has made it to the moon. This would be the first landing there in more than 50 years. CBS's Mark Strassman.
Odysseus began its odyssey 1 week ago.
Separation confirmed.
The six-legged spacecraft, 14 feet tall, is the first built and flown by Intuitive Machines in Houston.
The lander targeting the moon's south pole. Here's space consultant Bill Harwood.
This renewed interest in putting landers on the moon and eventually astronauts is because there's a bit of evidence that there could be ice near the south pole of the moon, which future astronauts could mine. You know, you can turn ice into water and air and rocket fuel, so that could greatly reduce the cost of deep space exploration.
And it could pave the way for astronaut missions for NASA later this decade, but we're still working to see if that happened. CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The leader of the Forest County Potawatomi is calling on Wisconsin lawmakers and other state leaders to find bipartisan solutions to problems like human trafficking and affordable housing. James Crawford gave today's annual State of the Tribes speech. He also thanked lawmakers for working to increase Medicaid reimbursements for tribes and legislation to boost affordable housing. Wisconsin farmers boosted conservation efforts between 2017 and 2022. That's according to the latest USDA agriculture census.
In so many ways, it is about access to programs within USDA or information, making sure that we can use all of those avenues to drive adoption in the way that we know there is demand for.
Mike Lavender is with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Gateways Counseling Services has announced it has found a location in Eau Claire to expand in the region. According to a WEAU report, the organization will move into the old Mark Owis Chiropractic Building on Westgate Road. They plan to open sometime in early March, bringing a vital resource into the area as HSHS and Provia prepare to shut down their Chippewa Valley operations. Director and founder of Gateways Counseling Services, Michelle Messick, says they have a team ready and could begin taking new clients by March 23rd. The Chippewa County Board passed two motions regarding Sheriff Travis Hakes on Tuesday night. The first motion called to forward the investigation to the district attorney's office and stated the county board had no confidence in Sheriff Hakes. The second directed the board and its committees to only get further information from the sheriff department's chief deputy. The motions passed 19-1. Sheriff Hakes released a statement claiming bias in the investigation from an agenda-driven Madison-based attorney. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Woody back in the clubhouse. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers pitcher Brandon Woodruff back with the team after signing a two-year deal with a third-year option. Woodruff asked after the shoulder surgery, is there any chance he could pitch this season?
I will tell you, like I've told every other team and every other person, I'm following Dr. Meister's orders. He's the doctor who performed my surgery. That's up to him. And I have full trust in Dr. Meister, and I think he's the best in the game. See where I'm at the end of the year, and if it makes sense, maybe. But if not, I'll be ready to go for 25.
Woodruff says several teams came after him in free agency. Once his deal was signed, the Brewers then signed former Yankees and Padres catcher Gary Sanchez to a one-year deal with an option next season. College basketball, Marquette with a dominating win at home, 105-71 over DePaul. Tyler Kolick with 18 assists, setting a new school record, surpassing Tony Miller and Doc Rivers. NBA, the Bucks and the Timberwolves tomorrow night in Minnesota. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the upper 20s. Mostly cloudy for tomorrow, maybe a sprinkle or flurry, high in the upper 30s. Sun's back for Saturday, mid-40s and breezy. Upper 40s Sunday, with lots of sunshine. The warmth and dry weather continues into next week. Currently 49 degrees.
You know, I hope this is the best hour of your life. I'll tell you that. The Cripes Cast, folks.
Comedian Mary Mack.
He's noticed a very sizable increase on people off the lake coming onto our lake to fish it. You don't want everything to be popular and known about. That seems to be the way I also approach my comedy, Charlie. I think there's a theme.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Allball. Friday noon to 3, we have Brady Ewing on talking sports and also more live from Hayward at the Birkenbeiner right here on the Civic Media Ready Network.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Thursday night, Wisconsin or Finland, we said wherever you're there. Johnny, the Civic Media app. We tell people every night, it doesn't matter where you are. If you have the Civic Media app, you can listen to us anywhere. Open it up. And in fact, tonight, open it up right now. If you're out there, open it up. Live text us, Johnny. We had lots of calls last night. Yep. Tonight, we're trying to get people live text the show. Ask us your questions that way. You know, especially those of you who are, you know, like going, I'm not sure my voice is going to sound right on the radio. Hey, not a problem with the Civic Media app. You just open it up and you live text the show. Johnny and Tim, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. And Johnny, two great guests tonight. And I met our first guest. It was probably 2015, I think it was, Chris. And we'll do a little bit more, but I'm putting together the Busted Pencils podcast, you know, kind of in the origin stages of just the podcast. And I'm going through it and I find this research out there from this guy who says, you know, I'm coming out of the opt-out movement, right? I'm taking my kids out of standardized tests. And he comes forward and goes like, hey, look, there's no need to take standardized tests anymore. Just give me a few variables and I'll tell your school what the test scores are going to be before the kids even take it. And I was like, no way. That's incredible stuff. And son of a gun, it was true. But we've got now the co-author. We've got our two guests here tonight. Our first guest, he is the superintendent of Manville Public Schools, New Jersey, United States. He earned his doctorate in education leadership, management, and policy from Seton Hall University. And before working in Manville, Dr. Maroon began his career as an educator in 2005 by serving, Johnny, check this out, as a social studies teacher.
Hey.
His co-author is an EDD, an associate professor of education leadership, management, and policy at Seton Hall University. He has worked as a PK-12 assistant superintendent, middle school principal, director of curriculum and instruction, elementary school assistant principal, but started his career elementary school teacher. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Jamil Maroon, Dr. Christopher Tankin. Wow, there you guys are. Chris, do you remember that interview 2015? You're like, hey man, kids do not need to take tests. You, the master, the magic man, just could say, hey, I can predict those test scores. Chris, how you doing?
Great. It's great to be back. Thank you so much for having us tonight. It's always a pleasure to bust some pencils with Johnny awesome. And Tim.
Hey, nice. That's what's up. All right. Thanks.
Chris and then Jamil, because Jamil's the lead author on this new research. We're going to get there. But but give a little bit of background, though, Chris, to this whole idea of test scores and predictability. And the concept, again, for a new listener who's like, wait a minute, did he say that before students take tests, there are factors that can be used to predict test scores before people take tests? That was your original research, right?
Yeah, that's the original research. Going back over a decade, we've done that many times now, as have other people. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so here we are now, though, and I'm going to bring this forward. I love the title, Pernicious Predictability of State-Mandated Tests of Academic Achievement in the United States. Pernicious Predictability. First question, though, Jamil, where did you meet this guy Chris at, man? How did this relationship? I see a little Seton Hall connection there, but Jamil, give us a little, you know, how do you two get put together? And as a school superintendent, what are you there doing writing information that might question the validity of state tests?
So I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Tinkin at Seton Hall. I was one of his students, and like everyone else who's taken his courses, you know, he walks in and he tells you that, and your brain kind of explodes, because here you are and you're doing all this work and you're trying to make sense of why certain communities don't do as well as other communities. And you know, he's presenting this, and it, you know, not to blow too much smoke up Dr. Tinkin, but he was the best professor we had. And I would say probably everybody in our cohort would agree that, you know, it was constantly challenging what we thought, you know, what we believed, and really making us think more critically about, you know, the work that we do.
Well, so on this study then, Jamil, just let you, since you're the lead author, give us a, you know, the listener a little breakdown and background information. You know, what's happening? Pernicious predictability. Where's the title come from?
You know, I'm gonna defer that to Dr. Tinkin. When we were chatting about, you know, what we wanted the title to be, I think, you know, one of the things that we wanted to point out is the importance of background knowledge when, you know, looking at key terms and keywords. And, you know, for everyone, you know, that's not a word you come across every day. Yet, you know, we're expecting people to know what it means without having that background knowledge. Chris, what would you say?
Yeah, no, I think, look, in terms of this study, right, we wanted to just to determine the predictiveness of various demographic variables that relate to student background knowledge on the percentage of students who pass a state mandated Algebra 1 test. You know, colleagues and I have done this in Ohio, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, and other people have done it in Michigan, Virginia, a lot of other states. But in a nutshell, we were looking at how factors outside of the school, specifically in this case, student background knowledge, how they influence student test scores. And this study was really an extension of work of, you know, what colleagues and I have been doing and others over the past 40 years on this topic. This is not new in terms of the basic ground we're covering. And I think that's important. There is a long line of existing research that we drew upon and continue to draw upon for our work. But essentially, you know, once again, Jamil and I found that these demographic indicators from the U.S. Census data, specifically related to family human capital and community social capital, can successfully predict the percentage of students who receive a passing score on these tests. And in this case, it was a high school Algebra 1 test. So, you know, I just used a couple terms, family capital and social community capital. For our study, I just want to kind of define those for everybody, if you're okay with that. Family capital.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, family capital is primarily, right? It's the financial capital of a family. And inside that term are the skills, the talents, the abilities, which ultimately influence finances. And then, so for us, we focus on the student's family as the closest level of human capital directly influencing the development of student background knowledge. And then we also look at the community social capital. And that's, social capital is like the glue that holds communities together. And that's the resources, the institutions in a community, you know, like public libraries, parks, civic organizations, your local businesses, chamber of commerce, the social services that are in a community to support students, and the youth clubs, sports, student peer groups, you know, et cetera. So I want you to be able to kind of go over the results. You know, when we put all that together, something pops out, right? And so, Jamil, tell us.
So what we were able to do is, you know, we took a sample of 159 high schools in New Jersey. And
100, wait, just make sure, 159 high schools, not high schoolers. 159 high schools. Okay, cool. High schools.
And what we were able to predict were the scores in 75% of those schools in our sample.
Okay, so there it is. I'm going to put that out there, listener. You're out there. My neighbor is going, what do you mean? Kids always, they got to take the test. You could predict 75%.
Yeah. So what we did was we took two you know, variables. We took family human capital, which was represented by the percentage of families in the town who make an income of less than $35,000, and community social capital, which was represented by the percentage of households in the town with an income of over $200,000. So based on those two variables, our model was able to successfully predict, you know, about 63% of the variance in the test scores. And in other words, you know, if we were to have a set of test scores and we were analyzing all the various factors that might influence the scores, like background knowledge, factors identified, these factors identified as contributing to 63% of the variance, and that was based on, you know, we were able to explain 63% of the difference or variation that we saw among the test scores. And this gives us an indication of how much variability there are in these test scores that can be attributed to factors that are outside of the school's control and outside of the considerations that we have. And, you know, the higher the percentage, the more influential those factors are in determining the outcome of the test.
So Tim and Johnny, overall, look, 63% is pretty high. You know, that basically means that out of school factors that can't be controlled by teachers, by administrators, are driving the test scores here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that, Crystal, too. And I just want to do like a little backtrack too, just a one or not a 101, but an exploit background knowledge for somebody who's listening out there. Maybe the way to understand that is, you know, I remember teaching reading. I was an elementary school teacher too, Chris, like that. You know, one of the things when you're going into a reading lesson, you help the kids, you know, before they read, develop some background knowledge so that when they get into reading that passage, when they come across words that might have to do with a bowling alley, if they're reading a story about bowling, you've developed some knowledge of what a bowling alley might look like so that they're able to read with a little bit more understanding. Now, there in that scenario, we're providing background knowledge first before they enter into the reading. What I think you're saying is that you're the background knowledge, though, you're able to really determine how strong bringing background knowledge is to predicting test scores. And then the other part of that is, and then figuring out, well, who are those students that bring background knowledge? And the reality is that it's not a whole lot to do with what's happening in school. That background knowledge is developed before school, out of school, social capital construct. Johnny Lupinacci, how did I do for break? Oh, man, 40s. Look at that.
We're going to break.
I lost a little check. Yeah, when we come back, Johnny Lupinacci, bring us out of here, man. Oh. All right. Back in a minute.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all, but not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said,
I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life. And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
I'm loving the music. Busted Pencils, the best bumper music on any talk show out there, especially education talk show. Actually, the best education talk show out there anywhere. Fully led at education talk, educated educators talking education. If you're on the Civic Media app, give us a text, ask a question. We've got our Dr. Jamil Maroon, Dr. Chris Tankin talking about pernicious predictability and the reality of test scores, how we can actually look at these. And I did a little background knowledge primer, but Johnny, you were saying your awareness of this predictability phenomenon.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's game changer, especially as a teacher. It was pretty early in my teaching career, and I'd started taking some grad classes, as most of us teachers do. And I was learning a whole lot about all the different factors that contribute to, and I really had the question, why is it so hard for students in the schools I'm in and for us as teachers to be successful, right? And one of it was I was pretty blown away when I learned the measures of success have a setup so that we're ultimately going to be failing. And that blew my mind. So it was like the high stakes test measurement stuff. And I was like, wait, what are we talking about? Like, I'm here, I'm all in, I'm ready. I think we have great learners. I think I'm ready to do great teaching. And, you know, and here we are and we're failing. Okay, let me see these scores, let me better understand it. And then I had a professor who told me he could predict based on other research and things. It wasn't magic he had, but the kind of research our guests here do. Right. He said, what if I told you I can tell you with some basic information of who your students are, how they're going to score on this test, this test, this test, and this test. And we were in Michigan and he named a handful of high stakes standardized tests that high school students were taking. And I'm like, come on, this is like a magic card trick. No way. No way. You know, I'm in my second year teaching. I'm like, this guy, these professors, they have some magic up their sleeves. Well, actually, what research showed, right, like similar to yours, there is some real strong predictabilities, in fact, strong influences that are even stronger than the ways that we're paying attention to what's happening in classrooms. So that kind of blew my mind. I was like, why are we taking these tests? What are they doing? Here I am being caught between, do I teach to the test? Of course not. I don't let the test dictate what I'm teaching. But yet these are this is how we're going to get funded as a school. These scores really do matter. Then I have a professor who's telling me, well, I can tell you what they're going to be before you even take them. And I'm like, what are we doing? I'm like, I'm caught between like a lose-lose or maybe a win-win. So for Chris and Jamil, can you help like our listeners who are other teachers like me, and they may know way more about tests than I did then, but like really, like what does this research tell us and how does it help us better navigate this contentious position that we're in?
Yeah. So, Johnny, you're hitting the nail on the head here. Our results and those of others show that these standardized tests simply don't measure learning of any student very accurately, right? The test results are easily contaminated by factors outside of control of the school. And it, simply put, the tests are really blunt instruments, right? I mean, if we could use background knowledge to basically tell you how schools are going to score, I mean, that tells you that the test is really blunt. But why does background knowledge show up in the test scores? I think that's what makes this so pernicious, is that we're going to be able to do this with every standardized test forever because of the way that standardized tests operate. So the background knowledge shows up. It's part of something. I'm gonna use, like an academic term here. It's called construct irrelevant variance. Basically, Johnny, it's what you saw. These are the things that are unrelated to students that can affect the test results. So it might be inappropriate test content. You know, some test content that's actually on our test isn't in our state standards. There's off-level test content. That happens sometimes. Some of the tests include content that isn't part of the grade level. Other examples include unfamiliar words, phrases, or think about this, like these word problems. Like there are examples of situations embedded in these test questions that aren't part of the formal state curriculum. Kids learn about them in their daily life, some of these contexts, but they don't learn about them in school. And I know Jamil has a lot of these examples. In fact, Jamil, you were talking to me, we were talking earlier, you saw this happen today in the classroom, right?
Yeah, I walked into a fourth grade class and the students were doing, you know, the math problem on the digital tool that they were using. And the students were so caught up with the word strenuous that they couldn't answer the question and they couldn't pronounce strenuous. They were asking the teacher, what does strenuous mean? And that was a math question that they were handling. And I've seen it with my son. You know, my son is in fourth grade. Last year on the state assessment, the question was about Diwali. And you know, he didn't have the background knowledge to write a complete essay about Diwali. And you know, like there's tons of examples like this. You know,
I couldn't do that right now, Jamil.
Yeah. And you see it consistently and regularly with students. And you know, in math, for example, if you're using a math problem and you're using some information or some vocabulary like gondola or you know, a word that students don't have and they have to write a math equation about skiing and things like that, you know, the students are going to have trouble understanding the question, and it's not related to math.
Yeah, right.
It's related to something else, you know, and the students are going to get hung up. They're not going to be able to move forward. And it happens a lot on math tests. You know, it happens more often than we like to think, especially in our national and our state tests, you know, that we're utilizing.
And I, look, we've all been teachers, right? But for people who haven't been teachers, one key to the process of learning is the integration of new information with student existing background knowledge, right? And so if a student can't relate personally to something they're reading or something they're learning, they're less likely to be able to learn it. That creates these issues that we see on standardized tests. And there are so many examples of questions based on specific occupations that are, you know, clearly middle class or upper class occupations or things that are only found in certain parts of the country. There's examples of questions with references to cultural issues that are not universal to all students. You know, there's questions that you have to have very specific life experiences to relate to. So the test questions basically assume, here's the issue, that all students have a standardized upbringing and they don't.
Right.
So that gets to be
kind of hitting a nail on the head on top of another nail that we're putting in the board here, because it sounds like we're saying we have some evidence here that the tests are sort of culturally biased, right? They're and that's thinking that, and maybe even non-intentionally, right? It's not like there's this malicious effort to slant the test towards a particular group of students, but we understand what we normalize as sort of culture writ large gets worked into the test. And then I've been finding too of recent kind of the pendulum swinging, like awareness of cultural bias, it sort of swung to these obscure, like not connected, like it really showed our cultural incompetency. Because it was like, I was reading a math problem on a standardized test the other day, and it was talking about someone buying 72 watermelons. And I remember thinking to myself, like, if I was a kid, I'd be so distracted, because I'm distracted right now because who's buying 72 watermelons? And what are they doing with this many? Are they a restaurant owner? And all of a sudden now I've used too much time that I'm supposed to use on that to do well on the test. And so I made a little joke about it. But, you know, I really appreciate this because it opens that question up. Because for so many of our folks out there listening that might not have that teaching background that we all have, or if you're a teacher listening and you were as dumbfounded as I was about these tests, you know, this helps demystify the process a little bit and then open up why we're talking about them, why it's important to question those scores and that system.
You gotta always, Johnny, got to question the scores. Standardized tests, what do they measure? More when we get...
Hey, everybody, it's Todd Allball. Friday, noon to 3, we have Brady Ewing on talking sports and also more live from Hayward at the Birkenbeiner right here on the Civic Media Ready Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers says he has no plans to sign a Republican bill to spend tens of millions of dollars to address PFAS pollution. He says in a letter to lawmakers it puts too many enforcement limits on the State Natural Resources Board. The Senate passed the bill in November, and the Assembly is set to pass it today. The U.S. Department of Education is offering breaks on student loans. Cora Hume is with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She says borrowers with non-federally held loans need to consolidate them into a direct consolidation loan by the end of April.
Older borrowers are less likely to hold direct loans, which would already benefit from this pay count adjustment. And then those that do own direct loans, they're less likely to participate in this IDR program that caps their monthly payments.
Hume says the savings has the potential to change lives. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Two people have been arrested following a pursuit on Interstate 94. According to the Dunn County Sheriff's Office, the suspect allegedly tried to use an altered check at a bank in Menominee but was denied, and bank employees contacted the police. Officers with the Menominee Police Department saw his vehicle on Highway 12 and tried to pull him over before he fled onto I-94 West. Authorities reportedly used spike strips to stop the vehicle and arrested two of the four people that were in the car. The chase caused a lane closure on I-94 for about an hour. The Eau Claire Police Department has announced six people are in custody following an 18-month-long investigation into drug distribution. According to law enforcement authorities, the investigation was focused on the distribution of fentanyl, methamphetamine, and other drugs in the Eau Claire area. Police say they seized approximately $250,000 of drugs that were allegedly being shipped across the region. It was one of the largest fentanyl distribution investigations ever in western Wisconsin. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Matt Nair on air.
Want to thank our previous guest, Bob Bonadour from the Milwaukee Planetarium. He's so knowledgeable and obviously loves what he does.
Yeah, because he gets to talk about space all the time. I'm not kidding you. I have watched videos about space and have started to cry. It's so flippin' beautiful to me.
Well, we found your birds.
Yes.
We have found your birds.
Space is my bird.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Compete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Is Jimmy Kimmel Live coming to an end? The host of the show, Jimmy Kimmel, ironically enough, alluded to a possible end in sight. The New York Post reports Kimmel believes this could be his final contract for the late-night talk show. The 56-year-old host's current contract ends in 2 years, and Kimmel says that might be enough. Kimmel is set to host this year's Oscars on March 10th. It's time for one of Pete's reluctant picks. Yes, reluctant. True Detective Night Country, the fourth season of the show, overall is a good watch. The show is set in the ominous and creepy setting of Alaska during 24 hours of darkness. Filmmakers blend the supernatural with good performances from the cast, which includes Jodie Foster. Warning, do not space out for a minute, or you will have to go back and watch the entire thing again. Don't you hate when shows challenge you to the point where you can't play video poker on your phone and follow the plot at the same time? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the upper 20s. Mostly cloudy for tomorrow, maybe a sprinkle or flurry, high in the upper 30s. Sun's back for Saturday, mid-40s and breezy. Upper 40s Sunday, with lots of sunshine. The warmth and dry weather continues into next week. It's 46 right now.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jam from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jam.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people don't say, oh, man, she's a Republican. She's a Democrat. She's whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Day afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Exactly what goes on.
I see Jameel smiling, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Jameel, did we told you it's the best soundtrack on radio right now out there?
I love it.
Johnny, you know, producer Anya putting up Throckmorton memes, looking at that and just going back and forth and saying, my God, but our guests, Jameel Maroon, Chris Tinkin, mm-hmm. pernicious predictability, state tests, background knowledge, all of this. Johnny, you're talking about this, you know, as a teacher, the realization that you came to when there was this sense of going, wow. So, and I'm going to put this out there. Isn't it, how did you deal with the demoralizing sense of potentially hearing that what I do in a classroom might not matter? Lupinacci, to you, man.
I mean, I just realized what matters. I said at the break, like, I'm kind of not the best advocate for or against these tests, because I was just like, what's real is that they are high stakes for my students, mm-hmm. my school. And ultimately, I cared less about this because I had some stability in other areas, even as a newer teacher. But ultimately, those stakes got even higher for me as a teacher, right? So it was important that my students did well. But I also knew this was a bit of a double burden, because it also meant it really wasn't measuring always whether they learned it, knew it, or could apply it all the time. And so it added a layer of stress, added a layer of pressure. I think it contributes to a lot of colleagues that I worked with feeling burnt out, are feeling like they weren't able to teach the way they had dreamed or want, or in the moment knew they could or needed to teach. And so it really seeped in and changed the culture of schools and classrooms quite a bit. I know it's kind of still going on. But that said, I think there's a lot of strategies that sort of navigate the big game long-term, better understanding what we could do differently to assess learning. That's a big picture. But thinking about what our school leaders and teachers can do, I mean, we have these experts with us here tonight who are breaking it down so clearly for us. I'd love to just ask, you know, Chris and Jameel, like, tell us, like, big picture, what can our listeners do with this kind of information? And especially teachers out there, what would you recommend or kind of help illuminate for the teachers out there who are caught in similar situations? We're like, man, we know this test. Okay, great. It's not really measuring the learning. Huh. I kind of figured that, thought it, knew it, or I'm reading about it, but what can I do?
Yeah, I'll take the big picture issue. I think teachers have a really, all educators have a really important voice in this, because we live this every day. We see the impacts of standardized tests and how they're not really measuring what they're supposed to be measuring. So I think any advocacy that teachers can engage in, educators can engage in through local associations, state associations, and then also their national associations, because that's really where the voices are. Mm-hmm. So to be the voice in the room that's bringing up these topics, to help drive the platforms of these associations, is crucially important. You know, like your principals association, your superintendents association, your teachers associations, they all have state, local, and national platforms. And so to get a voice in that, to make sure that the tests are not overused, right? We don't want to overuse these results. And I think right now they're being overused. So I think we have to find that, you know, what's the place for them, and create policy language that around that, because there are a lot of alternatives out there. A big alternative in the state of New York with over 35 schools, they use alternative assessments, and it's going fine. Their kids are getting into college. The assessments are fine. The accountability is fine. So we already have these big, large pilot programs going on in other parts of the country that we don't even need these standardized tests. So we have to work to put them in their place. Jameel, you have some, you know, you're a superintendent, you're seeing classrooms every day. You have some examples in terms of what are teachers doing, you know, in the class to overcome background knowledge issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I just want to add something really quick about, you know, what policymakers and bureaucrats can do is, you know, not quantify the quality of a school or community based on the results of these assessments when we know that they're predictive, right? You know, mm-hmm. we shouldn't be labeling schools and communities as failing because the results of the assessments, you know, and that is probably where we see the most negative impact, you know, on a community. Now, locally, you know, I think as administrators, educational leaders, you know, you take the results with a grain of salt, you know, like you have to understand that there is variance to these results, that this is just one measure in a lot of different measures that you're using to measure the quality of the educational experience for your students. And a lot of times it really, you know, as Dr. Tinkin said, it boils back down to background knowledge. You know, I went in recently, this was a few years back, and I was observing a class where a teacher had, you know, one of the most difficult, you know, kids who can't read, you know, one of the kids who just never could read and can't comprehend. And I walked into the class and she was doing, you know, the read aloud, and it was on Snow Dogs. And the kid was, you know, reading everything, not missing a beat. She was asking him questions and he was able to comprehend and he was giving responses. And, you know, at the end, I was confused because she had told me this is one of my toughest kids and this is a kid who can't read. And, you know, you when you hear that over and over again, you start making predictions about the kids, right? And we went to the teacher. I was like, how did this happen? And she's like, I don't know. Let's ask him. And we asked the kid. We're like, how did you know so much about this? And honest to goodness, he said, well, you know that movie Snow Dogs with Cuba Gooding Jr.? I watched it a lot, right? So the fact that he had that background knowledge, he could comprehend and give information back about his understanding. And in other cases, you know, when we look at the measures of the ways that we're assessing the students, it's building that background knowledge with them, asking them, you know, giving them information. One of the things that we've done in our district is we went away from double blocks at ELA and we've really tried to build, you know, content knowledge into the curriculum. You know, we focused on teaching kids how to read explicitly, how to write, you know, systematically developing a writing program and focusing on building background knowledge, finding field trips to send them to. We send our kids to Duke Farms, which is a community partner up the street. Every grade, kindergarten through 12th, goes there for a field trip, just so that they can get that exposure. You know, we found a partnership with the YMCA to allow our students to learn to, you know, I gotta be careful saying swim lessons. They're not swim lessons, they're drown proofing lessons, but learn school safety. And it's finding those kinds of avenues to expose our students who wouldn't have that exposure otherwise to information. It's taking your students to the theater. It's building those kinds of programs and understanding that test scores are just one measure, right? They measure one aspect of a student's learning. It's not measuring the quality of the child. It's not measuring the quality of the educational experience. And that really is something that as educational leaders, as teachers, we have to remember. And I say this to all my administrators out there, don't beat your teachers up over test scores, right? Like, it's relevant.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah, okay, so I have a policy recommendation now after hearing you guys. Failing test scores, that then is an indicator that the government didn't do their job. And so when we have schools that get failing grades, that's actually a black mark on the legislature or people in that. So in other words, politicians, when schools fail, that's your failure, not the kids, not the teachers, not the superintendent, not the principals. That's your failure. Because what I'm saying here is because, hey, if kids are coming to school and there isn't, we had this big conversation last night about the referendums in Wisconsin and the need to fund just so that they could do, and we said, we're not going to call them specials anymore. We're going to call them essentials, music, art, recess. The fact is that all of those are those things that are, say, above and beyond that go into making learning, building background knowledge, having field trips, the ability to do that. And if there are failing state test scores, there's probably an indicator then that these children and these families are suffering from some form of socioeconomic conditions. And those socioeconomic conditions, I'm sorry, not the teacher's fault, not the family's fault, not the school's fault. Chris, I see you want to jump in.
Yeah, no, I think your message is really important. Teachers and students shouldn't allow themselves to be defined by a standardized test score. That's just the bottom line. But I know teachers feel kind of stuck in the middle. But the fact is, good teaching is really what we need. Okay, if we teach well and we teach effectively, regardless of what the standardized test score says, that's going to benefit the student in the long run. So teachers actually have a lot of control, even though they may feel like they're being controlled. They control the quality of education in the classroom, and day in and day out, they deliver high quality lessons, and they are changing lives, regardless of what the test score says. The test score isn't changing lives. Teachers are changing lives. So just continue to teach at a high level, care for your kids, show them that you're there for them, and that's going to pay off big dividends in the long run.
And one of the things that I would say, you know, in our community where I work right now, we have some of the best, most amazing teachers who are committed and dedicated to our students. And one of the things that, you know, was interesting is some of the districts that outperformed what their expected results were. And understanding why they were outperforming their expected results. And I'll say our district was one, you know, and, you know, it's because our teachers are so dedicated and so committed. And I'm not saying other teachers aren't, but, you know, to work in a community like ours, you know, it is sometimes more challenging than working in other communities in different ways. You know, different communities have different challenges. You know, for us, you know, it's building those inroads with our parents to get them involved. You know, we have about 13% of our students who are ESL students. You know, it's building relationships with the families to support their students, and their kids are doing incredible. You know, one of my favorite students was a third grader who came to us when I was a principal at Roosevelt School, and she didn't speak any English on her first day. She came from Poland. She didn't speak anything. And I remember her dad coming in. She was in tears. He was upset. And he said, just take care of my daughter. And within 6 months, she was reading and she was working hard. And our teachers were dedicated to giving her instruction. And she spent her educational career, you know, our teachers built background knowledge with her. And now she's in the top 10 of her class. You know, I would joke with her when I see her, is like, are you going to be valedictorian? And it's because of the hard work of our teachers to support that student. But, you know, test scores, you know, may not show how great of a student she is, because she might not have the traditional background knowledge that the test scores are measuring. She doesn't have the same, you know, factors that tend to produce better scores, but she's a wonderful kid. You know, we have kids who end up in great schools, kids who get into Princeton or NYU and so on. But our test scores don't show that. And that's what we have to fight against.
Yep.
But I think it's important that, you know, since Jameel understands the importance of background knowledge, right, he's transferring that to his mm-hmm. teachers. So they're learning how to develop background knowledge on the fly, on the spot, for all of their lessons. That's going to make a huge difference as the years move on. So I think as a teacher, just something to keep in the back of your mind. Look, don't assume that your kids have background knowledge about the topic you're about to teach. Take 2 minutes, show them a video, have a quick discussion, build it on the spot, and then go from there. Problem solved.
Oh, what I love it. Yeah. So many pro tips for our teachers and school leaders. Sorry, Jameel, go for it.
I was going to say, one of the other things that we've done a lot in our district is like to do PSYOP training for a lot of our teachers in district. And, you know, initially we were doing it to support our ESL students, but we realized it supports all of our students. And a story I would tell, when I was growing up, I grew up speaking Arabic. I didn't speak English until I got to kindergarten. And I was terrible with, you know, American expressions. So I used to say all the time, don't punch a gift horse in the mouth, because I just didn't know better. And it's don't look a gift horse in the mouth. But, you know, my background knowledge wasn't that of a traditional American student in a middle class community. So there were times where I struggled with stuff like that. And it didn't stop me from finding success, and it didn't stop my siblings and my friends because of our background.
Oh, our guests, Dr. Jameel Maroon, Dr. Christopher Tankin, pernicious predictability, test results. Chris, where should people go and check out more of the information that you guys have been doing out there?
Sure. For me, you can go to christankin.com or just Google me and Google Chris Tinkin and standardized assessments, and a lot of my work will pop up real easy and free for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you'll get to see all that work. Well, Jamil, Chris, thank you for busting pencils.
Oh, yeah. Aces, and fellas. Thanks.
When we get back, Tim and Johnny breaking it down. Busting pencils back after the break.
Have a good night, fellas.
Thank you.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media Radio Network recognizes the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Kelvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Echoes of Empowerment, Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
It's Oscar season, and since the award started in 1929, more than 3,000 Oscars have been awarded. But only 60 have been won by Black actors. The first Black woman to win Best Lead Actress was Halle Berry for the film Monsters Ball in 2002. Denzel Washington earned Best Lead Actor for Training Day also in 2002, marking the first time both of the top Oscars were won by African Americans. That hasn't happened since. Listen for more Black history stories here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Tap.
Said busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Christopher Tankin, Dr. Jamil Maroon, pernicious predictability coming on, Johnny. Putting out, man, lots of knowledge out there on standardized tests. When you went into your bit about going like your second year of teaching and kind of having this knowledge dropped on you and the ability of how that kind of, you know, just kind of messes with your world. It's like, how many teachers out there do come into that with that sense of going, whoa, wait a minute. Is this for real? And then, what I love about Jamil and what Chris did, though, is they didn't go into the what you do doesn't matter. They went right. Very much into saying how much you do actually matters way more than the test scores, Johnny.
Which is important because I'll tell you firsthand, it doesn't feel that way when you're right in the thick of it. And in fact, it often feels like if it doesn't matter, then why are all these meetings front loaded and dominated with the numbers and the scores? Why are we sitting down and going over these scores over and over again? Come, like administrators, come watch me teach. Give me mm-hmm. feedback about my teaching. And I'm not picking on all administrators because it's not universal how they do this, but the scores seep in and the high stakes aspect of the scores start to take over and it takes up space. And it's kind of like expanding foam, Tim. You spray it and you're just like, and it blows up even bigger. And so even though we talk about it, and I think it's so great, Tim and Jamil came on, tonight, and they really were able to share knowledge that will help empower leaders, organizations to speak truth to the power of that spray foam, which is standardized testing, expanding everywhere in our damn classrooms. And so it does start to feel like all this information is pointing to what I'm doing. I know I feel like it matters, but the scores are coming back that they don't. I will tell you firsthand, when you overperform, like your students overperform, that's a messed up term, but I get it. We have to have it because there is sort of like, are you underperforming or overperforming district? But once you're overperforming and then ultimately you aren't, but you're doing the same thing or sometimes even more, it's not only disorienting, but it's really frustrating and demoralizing. So I love that they shared really practical things we could do as teachers and that school leaders could do to help empower teachers and students in their classrooms. But I also really love that they lifted up, like, let's remember what this is really about, because ultimately these tests are taken away from that. They're not a good measure of learning. That's the main point that was shared, is we have research that shows these aren't great measures of learning. And so if we're to care about good measures of learning, let's emphasize those and let's not let the spray foam take up the space.
But you're making me think of so many different things here as I look at this. So in the reality here of back to last, you know, the referendums issue, right? In the amount of money that actually goes into schools. Here's the thing, the amount of money, and this used to be one of my big opt-out movement things here is going, you know what? What if we took all of the money spent on standardized testing and channeled that into the essentials of music,
art, recess.
Right? It's like, okay, because nobody's going to vote for a referendum to pay Pearson or any other testing company more money to drop standardized tests on the kids. And you think about that, you go, man, when you hear about a referendum and they're asking for some reason, though, boy, those things always do get the money. When we say things like we call them specials, music and gym, we're calling them essentials. We can get rid of those. Think about how twisted that is to realize that the money is always there for the test. But yet when it comes to providing kids the essentials of music, art, recess, band, you got to vote to put that money in. I just, you know, thought there was a little bit of a twist there that was worth talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always will say it, and I think it's important, is follow the money. Again, that's, I said, when we know better, but then spend differently. And our guest tonight reminded us, like, this is high up decisions a lot of the time. Like, there's real important work that needs to be taken at, like, a state level that says, like, no, we're not doing this. Or that policy recommendations come through to say, these standardized testing are certainly not to be used in the high stakes ways they are. They may have some good merit to like the items on them, some things they might be a tool, but overall they shouldn't be used the way they are as the measure of learning and as a measure of determining whether a school is performing, underperforming, or overperforming, right? Or successful. And so, I mean, we could say it until, you know, we're all out of hot air and we got a lot of hot air.
There we go.
But I'm just going to say, it's great to have these experts on to help us get scientific consensus.
There you go. Thank you, Johnny.
On the informed decisions we make as part of our civic responsibility. Hey, we're going to talk about education. Let's get the experts to help us better understand. We've been hammering away at these tests for, you know, as long as I've been on the show with you, Tim, but this week pretty heavily. And now the experts came on and helped. It's so problematic.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, and I love that. That's why we have Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk every day of the week now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's there, you know,
Busted Pencils. You got them and you get them 5 days a week.
You know, and it's like coming back, you know, Busted Pencils. And that's what we always used to tell the students when they, you know, took that standardized test. Like, okay, you got that number two pencil, you're done with that test, bust it. Bust that pencil, get rid of that frustration, let that test go off into the world, and you come back as a student in my classroom. Let's get back to learning now. The test is over. It's moved on. You got people like Chris and Jamil out there who are saying, okay, wait, we'll analyze the results. We'll tell you what they're all about. Teachers, families, students, your job, take the test, move on. And you know what? Here's the deal. Bust that pencil when you're done. And I don't even know if we use the pencils anymore now. It's just, you know, a lot of on the computer here. But hey, the reality of what matters is what goes on in that classroom when you have that opportunity to be a learner, to engage in the deep discussions, the explorations, the trip down the street. You know, well, one of my first teaching jobs, our big field trip. Grocery store. People went like, that's a field trip? I'm like, yeah, the kids I had, some of them had not been to a grocery store. Huge. Talk about building background knowledge. The reality of saying into this full-fledged grocery market. You know, I also do remember too that the bakers, my kids were not very nice. And one of the bakers in the bake shop was like, you know, well, we could put you in this cake batter here to the little kids. That was a little bit frightening for my second graders there. But, you know, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Thank you, Chris.
You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin.
Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Hey, everybody, it's Todd Allball. Friday, noon to 3, we have Brady Ewing on talking sports and also more live from Hayward at the Birkenbeiner right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations filled with mean-spirited rhetoric? It's time to listen and engage. Join the Rational Revolution with me, Chris Alfine, Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday afternoons at 1 on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. We could